child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am a part of God's song. I am one perfect tone. I am in tune with the frequency of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am encoded with God's name. I am living in God's flame. I am eternal as the Spirit of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God.
Welcome to the light. The True Testament is brought to you by Light Enterprises, LLC, whose mission it is to bring the light of our Father back to earth and to heal the hearts of mankind and restore the power of the light for all creation. You are being given a second chance to hear the truth, the good news that Jesus brought 2,000 years ago. It is not the Judaic Christian New Testament, but it is the True Testament. You are about to hear the truth of who Jesus really was and what he really taught. It's the good news he brought so long ago, but it was hidden from you by a false teacher who was determined to stop this ministry and turn it all back to the worship of the God of Abraham. The truth will set you free from the doctrine of original sin and all the threats of eternal damnation and guilt and shame that accompanied this doctrine and overshadowed Jesus' teachings of unconditional love and forgiveness. You'll learn the truth of who and what you are and about your inner blueprint that is guaranteed to carry your spirit home to the worlds of light. The True Testament tells the entire story from the time Simon first met Jesus on the banks of the Sea of Galilee to the time when Simon himself was crucified in Rome. The book, Simon Peter's True Testament, is available on Amazon.com or through any bookstore. Amazon.com will let you order the ebook on your Kindle and download it immediately. So if you're anxious to hear the truth, to read the whole story, you can just go to Amazon.com and do that. Otherwise, you can order the book through any bookseller, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore. It is a print-on-demand book, so you will not find it on the shelves of your bookstores. You do have to order it, but as soon as you order it, it will be specially printed for you. We want to save as many trees as possible and not have a lot of books just sitting on bookshelves all over the country. We want to help save this earth as it is and restore the trees and the forest because they do give us the oxygen we breathe. So you do have to order it. It's a print on demand, but as soon as you order it, it will be printed for you and you will receive it within days at whatever address you would like to have it sent to. Okay. Now, let me recap a little bit about what we talked about last week. Actually, even better, let me read you the preface of the book, which is Simon's message to you, and it explains things very well. He says, to you and all who read this, you are about to embark on a new journey into an old territory that perhaps you think you already know. However, the landscape and the look of the main character may be considerably different from what you have believed it to be. You were in darkness when you traversed this territory before. Many things were hidden from your sight, and the shadows played tricks on the imagination. All I ask of you is that you be patient and keep an open mind. It is sort of like meeting your soulmate for the first time. You may be surprised that this person is not packaged at all like you had expected, and the circumstances are not what you dreamed they would be, but there you are smiling at each other, and you recognize the one, and you love them just the way they are. You are about to meet the real Jesus. He may be quite different than what you've expected, but you'll recognize the love and the teachings that made him a light in the world. What I'm about to share with you should in no way diminish your love for Jesus. If you have chosen to walk his path, you have chosen well. His path was, is, and always will be the path of love, the path of peace, and the path of compassion, forgiveness, and joy. As Jesus would say, let those with ears to hear, hear, and those with eyes to see, see. Respectfully, yours, Simon. So, last week we covered a little bit about Jesus. His real name was Yeshu, spelled Yshu and pronounced Ishu. Paul, of course, who wrote most of the New Testament, the Judaic Christian New Testament, he wrote everything in the Greek language, and so he called him Jesus. But his actual name in his own language was Ishu, and that's Yshu, Ishu. Okay, now last week I explained that Ishu was not Jewish. His ministry was to the Jews to try and bring them back to the light of the Creator, which he called the Father, the life. And as he always said, the life is victorious. Because he said everything is alive and everything is eternal. Yeshu was actually born in the Mandaean community on the outskirts of Jerusalem. And he was the son of a Mandaean priest. Priesthood is hereditary, and his father began training him at the age of 3. By the age of 7, he was reading and studying the prayer books and assisting his father in his duties, which included baptism, weddings, funerals, and other rituals. By the age of 12, he began studying with the head priest, and at age 16, he was initiated into the full priesthood. Mandaean priests are called Nazareans. And this is the beginning of understanding some of the eras that are in the New Testament. As I mentioned last week, everything was written by a scribe. Most people in that time could not read or write. And scribes were hired to write a letter, and then if you received a letter, you hired a scribe to read it to you. They were not spiritual people necessarily. They were not highly educated, but they did know how to read and write, and that was their trade. That's how they made their living. So when someone told them that Jesus was a Nazarene, they wrote down Nazarene, Nazarene, and everyone assumed that meant that he was from Nazareth. He was not from Nazareth, and he was not a Nazarene. He was a Nazarean, spelled Nazoraean. And that is what a priest is called in the Mandaean culture. Okay, so Yeshu was born to a priest. It's hereditary, so he became a priest and, of course, became known by that title, a Nazarean. That's just one of the many eras in the New Testament. For instance, also last week I explained about the wine. We were told in the New Testament that that it was a wedding and he turned the water into wine, and that was his first miracle. Well, a Nazarene's job, one of his duties as priest, was to prepare a special drink for the wedding party called Hamra, Hamra. And hamra is prepared by squeezing and kneading grapes and dates into jugs of water. which this is what he did. He squeezed the fruit into the jugs of water. Then it was poured through a cloth to strain it. It was poured into the drinking bowls. And of course, the dates and grapes and all gave it a kind of reddish brownish color and a kind of a sweet flavor. And it was loosely translated as wine, but it was non-alcoholic. Ishu, as a priest, was not allowed to drink alcoholic beverages. And so, whenever you hear anything about him drinking wine, it was that special drink that was served at weddings called hamra. And it's just a fruit-flavored water. Okay? And that was just a normal part of his duties at every wedding to do that. Now, there were several things, other things that we talked about last week. And I'm just going to touch lightly on them. He gave us 12 keys to the kingdom of heaven. And each of the keys was a very important for us to understand our place in the universe and our relationship with the Father. Because he took plenty of time, a lot of time with us to explain that the Father is a spirit that brought life to earth. And this spirit of life is in all creation. It's in you and me, it's in trees and animals. It permeates all of creation. And this spirit of life is eternal. And because it is in each of us, we are also eternal beings. Now, the first key that he gave us says God our Father is an eternal creative force who created life on earth. Life is defined as that which has been born and is breathing the breath of God. Ishu said that the soul or the spirit that is coming in to inhabit that body, that new baby that's about to be born, that the spirit hovers around the mother throughout the pregnancy. And when it is born and it takes its first breath, the spirit is sucked into the body. And with the breath of God, we are alive. Ishu taught that our Father is the great spirit that moves in all things and not a man sitting on a throne, issuing commandments and demanding to be worshiped. Number two, he taught that life, all life, is sacred because it is part of our Father. And all life means humans, animals, plants and trees, birds, insects, reptiles, everything that breathes the breath of God. We are to treat each other and each life form with respect and honor and kindness. Number three, he said we do not kill because all life is sacred and is part of the Father. He said it would dishonor our Father to kill what he has created and breathed life into. If we must kill to eat and survive, then we are to do it with kindness, causing as little pain and fear as possible, and blessing and praying for the spirit of the animal that is giving itself, sacrificing itself that we may eat and live. And we pray that it continue its life journey in peace, and we give thanks to it for giving of itself so that we might eat and live. He taught also that because we are children of our Father, we are empowered to create new life on earth. And he said it would dishonor our Father if we do not mate and bring forth children. That this was a great gift that we were given to be able, especially for women, that woman was given the greatest gift of all, to be able to create a new life within her own body and to bring forth new life upon the planet. So these are things that were very important for us to understand about our place in this world and about all of God's creation. He also taught that life is eternal, that the Father is an eternal being, And that because we are part of the Father's Spirit moves within us, that we are also eternal beings. And he said, for this reason, that there is no death. When the body temple that we inhabit wears out or is injured beyond repair, our spirit simply leaves the temple. And of course, we continue on into new lifetimes. In fact, he said that we have to live lifetime after lifetime. We have to be born again and again in order to learn the lessons that we are here to learn as children of the Father. Because we each carry an inner blueprint that will surely take us home to the worlds of light. He said that this inner blueprint is very much like the blueprint of other creatures, that an acorn, that tiny little acorn, carries within it the inner blueprint of a mighty oak tree. And that we carry within us the inner blueprint of a great light being. You probably never thought of yourself that way, have you? Have you ever realized that you are designed to grow into a great light being and to ascend into the worlds of light, to live with the Father and in amidst all the joy and love and compassion and peace and joy, joy, joy? It's amazing how much of what Ishu taught was twisted and turned and changed in ways that would make it fit with the teachings of the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament. Because Ishu did not teach the things of the Old Testament. He taught a new way of living, well, an old way. He said that the Mandaean teachings were the oldest teachings in the world, that they traced their lineage back to Adam. And that it had never, their lineage had never been corrupted, or changed in any way. He said that Abraham had been a Mandaean and had left them to follow another power. And that's why he went to another country and to a strange land. So the father that Ishu taught about is not the God of the Old Testament. I know that may come as a shock to you because so much of what we've been taught by the churches has tied everything to the scriptures of the Old Testament. And there are some beautiful, wonderful scriptures in the Old Testament, and there are also some terrible, terrible things that happen in the Old Testament. And people say, well, that's life. But what Jesus taught was always life-affirming. He never placed any kind of judgment against anyone who came to him for healing or was around him. He never criticized someone else for how they lived their life. Always he taught how to live a better life, how to go forth with love in your heart and to care about each other and to live in community with the rest of the world, with all living things, because he said all living things are part of the Father. So it's very interesting how things got turned around. But of course, Paul, who was really, his name was Saul of Tarsus, and he was a devout Pharisee. Saul of Tarsus was not in Jerusalem or Judea during the time of Jesus' ministry. He was up in Tarsus taking care of his sick father. And after his father died, he returned to Jerusalem, which turned out to be not too long after the crucifixion of Jesus. Well, when he returned to Jerusalem and discovered that many of his fellow Jews had started following this renegade priest who was teaching another teaching, he was infuriated and outraged, and he began a whole plan to stop the ministry and to stop everyone that had followed Jesus. He led groups of Pharisees from house to house and pulled out everyone that he had heard of that might have followed Jesus. And they were brought before the Sanhedrin, which was the highest council in Jerusalem for the Jewish people. Now, Jerusalem was under Roman rule at that time. Rome had conquered Judea. And so it was like Iraq has been for the last few years. There were soldiers everywhere, and everything was under Roman governing. Except Rome had allowed the Jewish people to retain their own council, the Sanhedrin, as far as passing judgment, because the Jews' judgment was very much tied in with the law of Moses. So the Romans had allowed that for them. But other inhabitants of that area came under the rule of the Romans, and the Jewish Sanhedrin had no power over them. So Saul of Tarsus went about with his group of Pharisees, searching for followers of Jesus and bringing them before the Sanhedrin, where they were charged with blasphemy and stoned to death. And he brought about the death of many, many people. But for some reason that he could not fathom, the ministry that Jesus had started continued to grow even after Jesus was gone. It was still growing and spreading. And no matter what he did to try and stop it, it just kept growing. And he heard that there was a group of a Jewish community in Damascus that had become followers of Jesus. And so he set out for Damascus to apprehend any Jews that he came across there that he could bring back to Jerusalem and have tried for blasphemy. However, Saul of Tarsus was a very learned man. He was well educated. He spoke three languages and wrote, he could read and write in those languages. And he had spent years in the temple studying the scriptures. He was a very devout Pharisee. So he apparently reasoned in himself that somehow killing them was not stopping the ministry from spreading. Somehow it was still going on. And so he claimed to have an enlightening experience on the way to Damascus. He said that a blinding light came upon him and he heard the voice of Jesus talking to him, and he fell off the camel and was blind for several days. And of course, they had to lead him into Damascus, where one of Jesus's followers heard about him and came to him and healed him. And of course, then he claimed that he was converted and he changed his name to Paul. However, when you read the True Testament, you will find that after years of struggling to become part of the Jewish community, I mean, of the community of followers of Jesus, that he finally went to see Simon, who by that time had moved out of Galilee because the Romans were enlarging their territory and they were sending legions up into Galilee. And so Simon and his entire family and whole entourage of extended family moved up to Antioch. And so, of course, Paul found him in Antioch several years later and demanded to be taught everything that he knew. And then he began to change the teachings in ways that would tie it back to the scriptures of his God, the God of Abraham. And of course, he and Simon had quite a confrontation and a falling out. And Paul went on to spread his teachings around the Mediterranean, which, as he went, he embellished considerably to the point of saying that Jesus was the son of the God of the Old Testament, the God of Abraham. And the thing is that Paul, being an educated man, did a lot of writing. He wrote letters to all the different places he had visited around the Mediterranean. Now, Simon, when after their falling out, understood that if Paul was going out telling that story, this was a real problem. So he and a nephew chose to follow after Paul and try and correct what he was teaching. But of course, Simon couldn't read or write. He was a fisherman. And he didn't think it was that important at that time because, after all, hardly anybody back then could read and write. He thought that if he followed behind Paul and told the true story and proved it by doing the healings, because he had the gift, Yeshua had passed that gift of healing on to him, and he was able to heal people. And that was proof that this was not some fairy tale he was telling. And so he followed along all through the Mediterranean behind Paul, trying to correct the teachings and everything. But somehow, some people followed Paul because he was so intelligent, so well educated, and that made him seem very powerful. And some people are impressed by power, and so they followed Paul. And of course, Simon came along, and his love was wonderful, his blessings, his ability to heal was wonderful, and people loved that. But some followed him and some followed Paul. So what happened is two different, completely different stories of who Jesus was began to be spread all around the Mediterranean area. Later, when Paul was in Jerusalem and he was arrested again, he was arrested at nearly every port that he went into because he was hot-headed, and he would start an argument with some of the other groups of religious teachings and everything, the Sadducees and so forth. He would start an argument, and then he would be put in jail. But he always played his ace card, which was that he was a Roman citizen. And so, because he was a Roman citizen, they would release him. And what happened is that after years of this, he was finally arrested in Jerusalem. And this time, the authorities there, the Roman authorities, who were very tired of him. I mean, his reputation had spread all over, all through the countries that they controlled, and his reputation preceded him. So this time they decided to send him to Rome for sentencing. And of course, in Rome, he was a very good talker, and he ended up only getting 2 years of house arrest. Well, his partner that had gone with him when he came back to Jerusalem and told everyone that Paul was just on house arrest and he was still teaching there in Rome, Simon Peter decided that he needed to go to Rome and correct the teachings there. And of course, that did not turn out too well for him. As you know, he was later arrested in Rome because, again, what happened in Rome is that the followers of Paul and the followers of Simon got into a fight. Unfortunately, people are hot-headed, and brought down, the Roman authorities. And Nero was looking for a scapegoat so that he could clear a certain area of Rome for a project of his. And so he had all the Christians arrested. Thank you. Now I'm going to read the foreword of the book so you'll understand more about what you're hearing. Dear fellow seekers, this is a true account of the life of the Apostle Simon Peter, as told by a person living today who was able to access memories of that lifetime. It is told in interview form to allow you to relate to Simon as he was in that lifetime without the distractions of who he is in this lifetime. The male-female format brings the balance of the yin and yang to the issues discussed and presents the account in a universally whole way. It reveals the answers to questions that have eluded the messenger who has returned to Earth to give mankind a second chance to hear the truth and to turn away from the darkness. He says that in the past, people have either deified or demonized the messenger, and the message is the important thing, not the identity or the personality of the messenger. Therefore, he wishes to remain anonymous. This account is not given for money, fame, or power. His sole purpose is to awaken and open the hearts of all who hear it. This will allow the unquenchable fountain of our Father's love, joy, and forgiveness to bubble up in those open hearts and flow back into the world. Jesus' good news of the kingdom of heaven shall be reestablished and the light of our Father restored on earth. Our Father is the life, and there is only life, and the life is victorious. So you may purchase the book, Simon Peter's True Testament, on Amazon.com. If you'd like to read it immediately, you can order the ebook for your Kindle and download it instantly. And if you want a hard copy that you can hold in your hands, you do have to order it. Now, you can order it through any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, or your local bookstore down the street, but you do have to order it. You will not find it on bookshelves because it is print on demand. We want to save as many trees as possible. So we do not print a book unless there is an order for it. But as soon as you place your order, it will be printed immediately and you will have it within just a few days. Okay, so take an opportunity, the first chance you have. I would urge everyone to read this book. It will open your eyes and it will open your heart. And there is a fountain of love just waiting to flow into your heart and bubble over with joy and forgiveness and compassion and peace. And life is so good. You just, until you have felt, had that experience of your heart opening and the love bubbling up inside of you, until you feel that, you can't even imagine what it is like. So as you hear the story and as you read the book, keep your heart and mind open, because our Father loves all his children. Our Father is the life. He wants us to be happy. He wants us to enjoy this wonderful gift of life that we have been given. Now, one of the things that Ishu taught that is really interesting, because he said, well, there are so many things that the church has twisted and turned. I mean, look at the monasteries with all the nuns and monks living celibate lives. And Ishu and his people believed that it was wrong to be celibate. And this is, you know, kind of strange, because the Catholic Church has taken a stand on sex being sinful and purity being associated with celibacy. But that is not the way Ishu taught. He had a completely different idea about purity. Many religions around the world have championed celibacy and denial of worldly pleasures, fasting, and punishing the body as a means of attaining purity. But they have lost sight of the goal, which is spiritual purity. These are all physical acts, and it is not the physical body that needs to be controlled and disciplined. It is the spiritual body that must be brought into alignment with the Spirit of God. Ishu's idea of purity was a pure heart, a heart that is open to give and receive love, a heart that is free of the thorns of anger, fear, hate, or guilt, a heart that is humble and compassionate and forgiving, a heart that is strong and courageous enough to love in spite of appearances. He said that a pure heart outweighs all the mistakes of a person's life. So it's kind of interesting that the church has put so much emphasis on purifying the body. You know, the body is a wonderful house or mansion that we live in while we are in the physical world. But the body is, like I said, only a house. All the purifying in the world will not give it eternal life. Our souls are eternal, and it is their purity that is important. I think probably the churches emphasize physical purity because it's a little bit easier to actually see results from, and it certainly is easier to punish. As I was telling you before, Ishu began training as a child to follow in his father's footsteps as a priest. And of course, one of the main rituals that the Mandaean people do is baptism. Of course, their reason for baptism is considerably different from what the, say, the Baptist church teaches, because of course, the actual teachings of Ishu were not given in the New Testament. Paul left all of that out. He didn't want people to know anything about that. He wanted to tie everything about Jesus to the God of the Old Testament. And the reason he was able to do that, before I go further, let me explain, is that shortly after the crucifixion of Jesus, which was brought about, it was a political thing because the Sanhedrin had no power over Jesus. He was not a Jew, and they could not do anything with him or to him. And so they had to go through the Romans to get something taken care of there. And so they told the Roman authorities that he was building a following so that they were going to rise up and rebel against Rome and take Jerusalem back. And of course, Rome was very sensitive to any thought of a group that might be growing and building that would be a rebellion. So their method of dealing with things like that was to cut off the head of the snake. They believed that, okay, if you've got someone building a following, you just get rid of that person. And if you cut off the head of the snake, the body will die. And so, of course, they went after Jesus for that reason. And that was why he was crucified by the Romans. Of course, Paul, and when he came back shortly after, and he and his group of Pharisees began tracking down Jews who had followed Jesus, they had a confrontation with Stephen, who was Jesus' son, who was just 16 and about to be initiated as a Nazarene priest himself. And they ended up stoning him to death. So it caused quite a stir in Jerusalem. And the Roman authorities got involved and wanted to know what was going on. And of course, the Jewish priest told the Romans, well, it's those people. You know, it's his people, and they are still planning a rebellion. And so, of course, the Romans took quick action, and they sent a legion into the Mandaean community and slaughtered every man, woman, and child there and burned their houses and burned their shops, completely destroyed the community, wiped it off the face of the earth. And then all mention of Mandaeans in Jerusalem was stricken from any records, both Roman records and Jewish records. So for all who followed, there was no record of those people, of the Mandaean people, having ever had a community in Jerusalem. So when Paul realized this, he realized that he could give Jesus any kind of history that he wanted to give him. So he said, yes, he is born of the line of King David. And yes, he is the prophesied Messiah that our people have been looking for. all these hundreds of years. And yes, this is what he taught, but he took every teaching and made it conform to some scripture in the Old Testament. And of course, in doing that, much of what Jesus taught never reached a printed word, was never actually written down, although some of it was written down, but at the Ecumenical Council in the 4th century, that was when they decided on putting together a New Testament. And they chose from all the different writings they had, they chose the writings that would conform with the consistent story that the church wanted to tell. They were troubled by this discrepancy between the two different stories all around the Mediterranean, the story of Jesus being this wonderful teacher, healer, who set people free from fear and all, especially fear of death, because he said we are eternal beings and there is no death. Only the body drops away, but the spirit continues lifetime after lifetime. So, when the Ecumenical Council chose to put together a New Testament, they chose certain scriptures and then they made sure everything conformed and agreed, and it all tied back to the Jews' Old Testament or their scriptures, which had been around for thousands of years, and so they felt that carried so much power. So we have two very different things that happened here, and unfortunately, the story that Paul told is what became the Judaic Christian teachings of the New Testament. Now, baptism was and is one of the number one things that the Mandaean belief system does, the priests do. And it is for the reason of cleansing a person of negative energy. They felt that a person could be polluted by certain things, and that the only way to cleanse them of the negative energy was for the priest to dunk them 3 times in the water and say this blessing over them, which sealed them in the light and protected them from the powers of darkness. Of course, the Baptist Church and all those Protestant churches that do baptisms today do it from the standpoint of the church that you are burying your old self and being raised again, your new self, in Jesus, and that from here forth you go forward as a new child, recognized by God. Okay, and it's a completely different thing. And of course, in today's baptisms, you're only baptized once, and that's after you have been saved and have acknowledged that your belief in Jesus as the Son of God and as your Savior. In the Mandaean belief system, they are baptized many times during the course of a lifetime because it's all about cleansing negative energy from them and restoring the light into their body and sealing them in the light so that they're protected against the powers of darkness. And this is something that was done especially when the portals were open. And Jesus taught that there are three major events in life that open the portal between worlds. For instance, when a baby is born, the portal has to open for the spirit to come in that is going to live in that body that's being created in the mother's womb. And of course, when we die and our spirit leaves our body, a portal opens so that our spirit can return to the spirit world. We come in and we go out, and we come in and we go out. Also, at the time that a marriage is consecrated and consummated, rather, they believed that that opened a portal because it carried with it the possibility of creating a new life. So whenever sex was involved, whether it was on the wedding night or thereafter, whenever man and wife made love. Afterwards, they would go out into the river and baptize themselves, dunking themselves 3 times and asking to be cleansed and purified and sealed in the light. Okay, so it's a completely different aspect of baptism, and it's somewhat similar to other religions around the world that use either incense or burn sage, like Native Americans do, to cleanse negative energy off the body. The Mandaean people believe that water is living, a living being, that spring-fed lakes and rivers, this is living water, and that the power of living water can cleanse with the blessings and the prayers, can cleanse negative energy from the body and restore the light and love of the Father. So it's a completely different viewpoint about baptism, but it's a beautiful, beautiful teaching. And let me see if I can find the prayer that is said at the baptism, because it's really a beautiful thing that I would like to see restored in the way we baptize people now. Excuse me. Well, I should have marked where it is. I will give you the prayer on the next show because it's really important. We could all do well to do that prayer. But what I will share with you is something, another little prayer, a little blessing that Ishu gave to Simon and all the followers and all the teachings. It's kind of a mini baptism. And he advised people to do this in the morning when they get up, that this is a great way to start the day. And he said that what you do is you take a little water on your fingertips and you touch your eyes and say, "Bless my eyes this day to see with eyes of love." And you touch the water to your lips and you say, "Bless my mouth, my tongue this day that I may speak words of love." And you bless your heart, touch the water. Your finger, dip your water, fingers in the water, touch your heart, and say, "Bless my heart that it remain open and filled with love today." And we reach down and bless our feet, touch the water to your feet, and say, "Bless my feet that I walk upon the earth in a good way today." And then hold your hands under the water and say, "Bless my hands that I may do good works with these hands in the world today." And then you close that little mini baptism by saying, "Thank you for my life. Thank you for the opportunity to be here and be of service. Bless me in all that I do and say, and bless this day, and thank you." And so it's a beautiful, beautiful way to start the day. It gives you a new sense of aliveness, and it reminds you of how important our senses are, how important what we see and how we look at things is, how important the words that we speak and the choice of the words that we speak. Do we speak words of love and healing, or do we speak words that are hurtful and that are a curse to the people that hear them? Do we use our hands in a good way on the earth to do good things, to create beautiful things? Do we walk in a way that feels good and honest and true upon the earth? It's a wonderful thing when you begin to understand that you are alive as the Father. The Father is within you, and you don't need to give your power to anything or anyone out there, out in the sky or up in the heavens, which is really just the sky, or anyone outside yourself. Your connection with the Father is in your heart. And so live with your heart full of love. and consciously aware of your connection. You are never alone. You are the beloved child of a great and loving spirit of life that Ishu called the Father. And he said, there is only the life, and the life is victorious. And so I wish for you in the coming 2 weeks before our next show, much love and joy and a sense of belonging and being part of this wonderful spirit of life that we call the Father. Until next time, may the spirit of the Father be alive in you and your hearts filled with love. And may it bless your days and nights with joy. Thank you for listening and being part of the show tonight.
I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am a part of God's song. I am one perfect tone. I am in tune with the frequency of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am encoded with God's name. I am living in God's flame. I am eternal as the Spirit of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am a child of God. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am embraced in love and light. I am protected by God's might. I am safe in the arms of God. I am a child. I am living in the temple of God. I am a child of God. I am breathing the breath of God. I am breathing the breath of God.